Ahoy, mateys! Welcome aboard the Shallows, the pod designed specifically for all you 10-team and Smart League managers out there. I'm your captain, Eric Hinrichsen, alongside chief mate, Carson Picard. Carson, how are the seas faring today?
The air conditioning is pumping down here in my basement where I record all of these, and so currently I am colder than the New York Yankees batting lineup, but I am doing well otherwise.
Nice. Yeah,
ouch is right, Eric. They've been bad.
We are going to talk a little bit about your Minnesota Twins sweeping my Yankees.
Because,
yes, they did. Yes, they did. all right. Well, on today's show, it is the Captain's Report. We've got a new segment called Bail or Sale. That's a lot of fun. You're going to stay tuned for that, and we'll let you know what that is a little bit later on in the show. And then just some fun observations that we've sort of noticed over the course of either recently or the season, or just, you know, some things that we found particularly funny. Like, you were introducing me to somebody named Binface?
Count Binface.
Count Binface.
Count Binface. Man. Way too different to talk about in this show. But do yourself a favor, everyone watching. Look up Count Binface and what he's been up to in the UK politics. It's a wild world we live in, Eric. It's a wild world.
It is a wild world. So wild that Paul Goldschmidt went from being a, you know, maybe you should add him, to going 0-for-30 over the last week. So we're going to get into that in just a little bit. But before we officially leave port, we release a new episode every Friday. The audio version releases at 7 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your podcast, and the video version premieres on YouTube the same night at 8 p.m. Eastern. As well, if you want to see our beautiful made-for-radio mugs, mine's a little burnt. I was in the sun this morning. So be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Yeah, the one thing I forgot was sunscreen. I brought everything else.
And yeah, that's a pretty bad thing.
I know. Yep, that's why I look a little purple.
Mm.
And orange. Maybe it's the shirt that's bringing out the purple. I don't know. They're kind of Yankees colors. Oh, and, you know, leave us a 5-star rating, a like, a thumbs up, a kind review. And don't forget, we're part of the Pitcher List Podcast Network, so check out the other pods we have available as well. There are new episodes out daily, and visit pitcherlist.com for all the latest and greatest content published as well. I have some news. Normally I ask you, you know, how things are going. I am going to be on the This Week in Fantasy podcast for us here. Ooh. At Pitcher List this week as a guest, so be sure to check out that episode when it comes out. I don't know what that's going to be, but it will come out. It'll be This Week in Fantasy.
I've been on that one before. It's a great time. Say hi to John for me.
Will do. I think I'm filling in for John. I'm going to be on there with Patrick. Yeah.
He's a Twins fan, so do be aware of that.
Okay. Good to know. Thank you for the heads up.
You're just trapped with us.
I am. What did I do? Just kidding, you guys are fantastic. Love me some Twins fans. You want to know why? Midwestern charm. Gotta love it. When we come back, it's the Captain's Report, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric, and this is your Captain's Report. We're going to start off with some injuries and other news that has accumulated over the last 7 days. We are recording this on Wednesday, July 8th, so do keep that in mind. You're probably listening to us on Friday, July 10th, which is my wife's birthday. Happy birthday. Early birthday to her. Or if you're listening to this on your birthday, happy birthday. Anyway, injury news. Tyler Soderstrom activated from the IL today. He went from, this was wild, in like a 36-hour period. He went from not close to close to activated. I don't think there was any rehab. He just started doing some on-field work, and they activated him 1 day over the minimum from that hip impingement, which we kind of tried to learn what that means last week, and it's still unclear. Sore hip, essentially.
Yeah. Yep.
Speaking of sore hips, Byron Buxton missed 4 days with a hip impingement and then came back and immediately aggravated it. He heads to the 10-day IL, and I believe he aggravated it on a steal attempt. It was unsuccessful, and that ended a streak of like 37 consecutive stolen bases, successful stolen bases for Buxton. He's so good.
Yep. Quietly, Byron Buxton is the all-time leader in stolen base percentage, I think by a considerable margin. Yeah, wow. It's over 90% that he converts on stolen bases. Yeah, he's great at that. But yeah, unfortunately, it is around the All-Star break, so this is definitely like using that to their advantage, but for sure, unfortunate.
Yeah, unfortunate. I do like that he tried to play through it, because I feel like I know, but I know, not because, oh well, now he's on the injured list, but for this reason, because I feel like Buxton a couple years ago automatically on the IL the second he hurt that hip initially. Yeah. And now there seems to be a little bit more sturdiness, for lack of a better term, to his durability. So I do like that, but I'm sure he'll be back shortly thereafter the break. And I bet when he is back, he won't miss a beat. He's been fantastic this year. Another player headed to the 10-day IL, Ryan Helsley to the 10-day with elbow inflammation. He is seeking a second opinion. Not good. Not a fan of that. But Tyler Wells has picked up two saves in the time since Helsley landed on the injured list. Is Tyler Wells the guy to add right now, or are you stashing one Felix Bautista as he works his way back from a shoulder injury last season?
Yeah, Bautista, I mean, remember, this guy was one of the best closers in baseball a couple years ago and still has been pretty solid on a rate basis. I mean, for now, Wells is the guy, but definitely, I mean, can I say both? I mean, if Bautista comes back, this is a premier arm. And so let's not forget that.
Tyler Wells has been fantastic out of the bullpen this year in general too, so I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Wells keeps the job rest of season. I will be interested to see what the Orioles do going into next year with their closer situation. Is Helsley a free agent?
I don't know. I think so. I can look this up.
Yeah, it's just not good for Helsley because he did miss time earlier in the season, actually not too long ago. I think he missed 6 weeks with an arm injury. So not great, Bob, as they say.
2027 player option. So,
well, you know, that's not being declined. Yeah. Yeah. I doubt he declines that. All right. Moving on here to another pitcher with elbow issues. Carlos Rodon to the 10-day IL with heavy elbow inflammation. Please note, with Ryan Helsley, they did not say heavy elbow inflammation, but with Rodon, they are.
I've never heard that.
Yet, neither have I. How can it be more or less inflamed? It is just inflamed. I'm not a doctor, though. Not a doctor. So his UCL is intact, though. That is Carlos Rodon. He's most likely going to be out till mid-August. What are you stashing Rodon? It's not like he was the most dominant player. We did talk about him either last week or the week before. Is he kind of doing what you expected him to do? Are you stashing him? Or are you dropping him? What are you doing?
If you have the spots, obviously you can stash him, but I think he's the first guy out kind of deal. I think Rodon in shallow league is not going to deliver on a lot of the ratios that well, maybe ERA a little bit, but the whip's not going to be there. And and certainly not a lot of other things as well. So I'm like, I'm indifferent in a shallow league.
You know certainly what I did? I draw actually in a redraft shallower league that I'm in. I did drop Carlos Rodon and I picked up, because for some reason he was out there on the wire, Logan Henderson as my replacement, because my IL spots in that league, I've been very unfortunate. Just in the last 3 days or 4 days, yeah. I lost Carlos Rodon, Ryan Helsley, and Connor Griffin on the same roster. And that doesn't mention that, and Byron Buxton. That doesn't mention that Wyatt Langford and Ronald Acuna and Garrett Crochet are all on my IL in that league. The amount of injuries I have had on that team is ridiculous. I'm in second place somehow, but it would be a runaway freight train had all those injuries not happened on that roster. Speaking of Connor Griffin, 10-day IL, out 8 to 10 weeks with a torn tendon in his finger, and he's going to wear a brace for 6 weeks. Here's a tricky one, because 8 to 10 still falls within the season. It comes down basically to the playoffs. What are you doing with Connor Griffin?
Connor Griffin is a really good talent that I don't know if I totally trust, and I'm hesitant. One of the things is like, how aggressive is he going to be with stolen bases coming back from this thing where I think he got his finger hurt on a stolen base attempt. He got it clipped, if I remember correctly. That's a little speculation, but that's what I think happened. It got clipped on his pinky or whatever. First of all.
Yes.
And I think that, I mean, I would be surprised if he comes back and starts stealing a ton again. I feel like that would be, I would be surprised with that. So I think Connor Griffin overall, you can hold him, but it's really dependent of how much you need that ceiling.
Well, I'll tell you this, because I had so many injuries all at once on that one roster, I did drop Connor Griffin and I picked up Cole Carrig, who we are going to talk about a little bit later in the show. Speaking of these injuries that I've had on this team, I did mention Wyatt Langford. Wyatt Langford is trying to make it back before the All-Star break. He ran at a high speed, whatever that means. That means he sprinted all out. I just love the wording of some of these reports. It's like, can we just speak normally? He sprinted. He ran through sprints. Like, he ran the bases. Like, not, he ran at a really high speed. Okay.
I love that. I love it so much.
I would say, Wyatt, just stay out through the All-Star break. We don't need you coming back too soon. Okay, and then ending up on the IL again. Hopefully he doesn't miss a beat when he does come back. Ronald Acuña will start rehab games, quote-unquote, again with the wording, soon. Okay, whatever soon means. Does that mean today, tomorrow? Tyler Soderstrom was going to come back soon, and he came back the next day. So what does this mean for Ronald Acuña? I'm going to guess shortly after the All-Star break. Is that your guess?
I think so. I think that was the timeline that was initially proposed, and I think they're going to stick with that. Although the Braves may need to get a jump start and a little bolt into their offense as soon as possible. So maybe they will try to accelerate that.
Yeah. I'm hoping Ronald Acuña comes back and is sort of like the fantasy MVP of the second half, which he's totally capable of doing if he can just stay on the field. Another guy working his way back. He did, however, start his rehab assignment. That is Jeremy Peña. Started his rehab assignment on Tuesday, 7-7, and is aiming to return before the All-Star break as well. My assumption is started Tuesday. Maybe he'll come back for the weekend series. Are you activating and inserting Jeremy Peña back into your lineup right away?
Yeah. Peña's a great player.
Yeah.
Really good.
He has been really good when healthy this season. Unfortunately, I believe this is his second IL stint this season. Yeah. Yep. We got to get guys to stay healthy. I think the biggest issue with injuries this season is not that there's been more or, you know, more than usual. I don't think there has. It's just who gets injured this year has been the top, like your core players, those like first eight rounds that you would have drafted.
Yeah.
It seems like everybody in those rounds has had at least one IL stint. I mentioned him a few moments ago. Logan Henderson is returning Thursday. So, by the time you listen to this podcast, he will have pitched versus St. Louis. He's probably going to be on a pitch count limit, as he did only get up to 68 pitches in his last rehab outing. Carson, I know the answer to this. We're not starting him. You shouldn't have. I will speak in the past tense real quick. You shouldn't have started him yesterday against St. Louis, but are you activating Logan Henderson and starting him going forward?
Yeah, probably. I can't think of a really good reason why you wouldn't. I mean, he's been pretty solid over the course of the year. I think Henderson's a guy that you should just, yeah, I think you can trust him enough. Don't start him in the game back and maybe we'll look like total fools. You know, but Logan Henderson has a lot of good attributes to him, certainly on a rate basis. And, yes. So I'd believe in him.
Yeah. I think Logan Henderson's been nothing short of great. Anytime he's appeared in a major league game, I just want to know what the Brewers know that we don't know, that they sort of have treated him with kid gloves. I'm not really sure why, because he's just been so good anytime he does pitch in the major leagues. All right, and last bit of sort of injury / other news here before we get to the top performers of the last week, and that is Justin Verlander today announced that this season will be his last. Carson, as a fan of the Minnesota Twins, Verlander has been in your division for a large part of his career.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Verlander, his legacy, and all that.
Verlander, I recently wrote an article about Jacob Mizorowski, and one of the notable things about him is being able to hit 102 miles an hour, which is crazy. But Verlander is one of the only starting pitchers that has touched that mark since 2008 and probably ever. Verlander is a really interesting pitcher, phenomenal pitcher, but a really interesting pitcher in his career arc. He never had necessarily like two or three, five phenomenal years. It was very much a if I kind of compare this generation of pitchers to some of the 90s great aces. So you know, your Granky, Kershaw, Verlander, and Scherzer are kind of analogous to your Pedro, your Randy, Maddox, and Clemens. And of those, Roger Clemens absolutely pairs well with Justin Verlander in terms of their career arc, their longevity, and just different moments of greatness. Young in his career with the Tigers, an overpowering arm and velocity, tremendous fastball, and was able to just blow by everybody. Later in Houston, able to refine his stuff a bit more, become a more efficient strikeout master, just a huge part to those late 2010s Astros teams. And then coming back from a second Tommy John, and really, I think, being a example of how you can come back late in your career from such a surgery. Remember, I mean, this was a guy who threw six innings from 2020 to 2021. Like, there was no guarantee he would come back at all. Goes and throws a 1.8 ERA, wins a Cy Young, I believe unanimously. A all-time phenomenal career, very interesting career, one of the best power pitchers of all time, and someone that obviously will get in first ballot at Cooperstown. Just one of those guys is, will any writer decide to be funny about it and not put it, their name on it?
Right, like whoever didn't vote for Ichiro last year, that James jerk. Writer.
I think I know who it was. Yeah.
I love that. That was a really great synopsis of Verlander. He's just one of the most memorable pitchers of his generation, one of the most dominant pitchers of his generation, one of the most consistent pitchers of his generation. You're talking about a guy who has 556 career starts. He has not once come out of the bullpen. Every single game he's pitched in the major leagues has been a start, no matter how short, but it has been a start. No opener for Verlander ever. And I think it is quite remarkable for him to have come back from Tommy John and just, he was great. He was literally great. Like you said, he won the Cy Young. He was great the year after that too. But injuries have sort of caught up with him as age has as well. He's one of the guys in recent history that struck out 300 hitters in a season. Like, that is not something that happens very often. It's him and Gerrit Cole are the two that I can name that have done it.
Kershaw touched it once, I think, but it's probably almost never going to happen again, or at least it'd be very difficult to happen again. Verlander is currently eighth on the all-time strikeout leaderboard. He may creep up and touch Don Sutton. He's about 20 away from getting there, but Verlander, one of the best to ever do it. Mets legend Justin Verlander.
Love that, Carson. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, it'll be the top performers of the last week still in the captain's report, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric. And this is still the captain's report. It's the top performers over the last week. But real quick, before we jump into that, we did quickly look up who the most recent 300 strikeout arms were, and it is none other than like four of the big five pitchers of their time here. It is Gerrit Cole. It is Justin Verlander. It is Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw. Pretty, pretty elite list of names there. So back to the captain's report here. The top performers over the last week, we're going to start with hitters. Ryan O'Hearn, 9 for 26 with a .436 batting average, a .1145 OPS, and that includes a 3-homer, 10 RBI game that he had yesterday on Tuesday, 7-7, and that basically accounts for all of his homer and RBI stats over the last week. Pretty good game, though. Any interest in Ryan O'Hearn in shallow leagues? I know I roster him in deeper formats.
I think it's really tough for him to beat out any of your hitters unless you have a real litany of injuries to some of your main guys. O'Hearn doesn't play in, I think, O'Hearn has outfield eligibility. Yeah,
my yes, he does. First in outfield. Yeah. Yep.
So that's a little nicer. That's what I thought. It was first in outfield. But I think still, like, there's a lot of great options out there, and O'Hearn doesn't offer enough stolen bases or anything like that in order to make up for some of his, I mean, he's great offensively, but it's still relative to a lot of the other top performers you're going to have in shallow leagues, relatively pedestrian. I don't think there's a lot there. So, guy to pick up if you are really lacking in depth.
Yeah. I think the Pirates should maybe spend money sometimes, because look what they did. They spent money on Ryan O'Hearn and he's been fantastic. All right. I mentioned him earlier in the show, but Cole Carrig has been fantastic over the last week. 10 for 21 with a 476 batting average, a 1410 OPS. Wow. 10 runs, one homer, 10 RBIs. He's not running a ton yet, but he might very soon. Stole a bunch of bases in the minor leagues this season before getting the call. And of course, last week was a Colorado week, but we are recording this on Wednesday, which means there are some days that had nothing to do with Colorado. In fact, in San Francisco, which is the opposite of Colorado as far as hitters go. Cole Carrig, an interesting name. If you need some outfield depth, he was the addition that I made to drop Connor Griffin and pick up hot outfield bat that I needed in a shallow format to fill while I wait for other injured players to come back. Elliot Ramos, since being activated from the IL on June 28th, 12 for 36, a 333 batting average, 1174 OPS, 10 runs, 4 homers, 8 RBI. Any interest in Elliot Ramos? He has some pretty good under-the-hood numbers going on.
I feel like we've played this song and dance with Ramos for a few years. Of like, yes, he's a pretty solid player that I like some things about him, but is he really dependable? And I think generally it's been no. He's a good hitter. He is a good hitter. I don't think there's a lot that I love here. And I I just pulled up some stats just to make sure I'm not wrong with what I'm saying. He's not a stolen base guy. And no, he's going to have maybe 20 home runs without just think strictly outfield eligibility. I think you're stretching it to Adam. I think you're stretching it.
Yeah, he's not the highest ceiling player, but again, if you're looking for a hot bat to fill in for some of these injuries that have happened over the last week, why not? He's hot. It's that point in the season where I'm like, all right, I just need an injury fill in. I'm not looking for the guy who's going to be fantastic rest of season, unless I have now a hole for rest of season. I'm just looking for the guy who's going to help me get through the week in like my head-to-head weekly matchups, or the guy who's not going to actively hurt me in like a roto sense. All right, moving on. So those were three hitters that were top performers over the last week. Now we're going to move on to some pitchers. We've got Ian Seymour here first on the list. He's been really good. He is kind of like the name to pick up on the wire if you need a starting pitcher right now. 11 and a third innings pitch, 20 strikeouts, a 3.18 ERA, a 0.79 whip, 2 W's, and 1 quality start. Carson, any interest in Ian Seymour, who I would just like to point out has had major control issues in his professional career up until this point?
Yeah, well, you know what? He's got the Nick seal of approval, and if it's good enough for him, most of the time it's good enough for me. Ian Seymour has just been really excellent. I think he's the guy that you definitely want to be aware of if some of those control issues do come back. But you know what? He is barking. He's barking like a dog, and he is just fantastic. I think he's been excellent so far.
Love the strikeout upside of Ian Seymour. I will say that one of these outings was against the ice cold Yankees, so take it with a grain of salt. Just saying. All right, moving on. A guy who has, we were both wrong on him. He was out to drift with some players that we didn't have any interest in the preseason. We put him on the little raft and the dinghy, if you will, and we sent him out to sea. Zach Wheeler, all-star snub, not happy about it. yesterday on Tuesday, July 7th, he went out and threw 7 innings with 14 strikeouts, but that was his second game in a row of double-digit strikeouts. Over his last 11 and two-thirds innings, which covers 2 starts, that's right, the one before that was only 4 and two-thirds innings, 24 strikeouts, a 3.86 ERA, a 1.2 whip, 1 win, 1 quality start. He is, if I'm not mistaken, a top 10 player in fantasy so far, depending on your format. Zach Wheeler has not missed a single beat.
Hall of Famer?
One more year of this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree.
One more year of this.
I think I agree with him. It's been, he has been the best pitcher of the 2010s. Or 2020s, rather.
That's a bold statement because Gerrit Cole still pitched in the 2020s.
Right.
The Tarek Skubal has pitched in the 2020s.
Yes, and that might be actually the one that's actually true.
One more for you. Paul Skeens has also pitched in this decade.
But overall, in the 2020s, let me just make sure I have this right. Since 2020, Zach Wheeler, 2.85 ERA across over, coming up on 1,100 innings. As credit to Skubal and Skeens and DeGrom and, you know, pick any name out of the hat. Wheeler, in terms of the raw volume, has been fantastic. And we'll talk more about Skeens in just a bit.
Yeah, Zach Wheeler, we were totally wrong. He seems fine. The velocity is down. Just saying, that was our biggest worry. Doesn't matter.
Every single stat, I'm looking at it now, every single rate stat's almost exactly the same for the last 4 years.
This is bonkers. With less velocity.
Dude, nuts.
Yeah, it's incredible talent. Last up here in our pitcher, Sean Burke went 6 innings with a career-high 11 strikeouts versus Cleveland. Are we picking up Sean Burke?
I wrote about Sean Burke a few years ago, back when he was mainly a reliever, and I highlighted that his fastball was really excellent. In the last couple of years, it has gone down in velocity. In that start against Cleveland, I think I highlighted it on the First Pitch podcast, which I host on the weekends. The fastball velocity on Sean Burke was up a little above 96 miles an hour, and it has about 18 inches of IVB, something around that. So his stuff, his PEL stuff plus was, I think, 118 for that start on the fastball. So it is really good when it is at that velocity. So that's something definitely to monitor with Burke.
That's incredible. He's been really good since he came out of the bullpen for 7 1/3 innings. I hate saying that. Stupid opener. 7 1/3 innings against the Yankees. and got the win, but also I think theoretically the save. I hate it so much. All right, back to hitters here real quick. Otto Lopez, just gonna give him his flowers. He did go 1 for 5 yesterday on Tuesday, July 7th, and we are recording this on Wednesday, July 8th, but for the 7 days prior to that, so if you take out last Tuesday and you go basically last Tuesday to Monday, he was hitting 500 with 7 runs scored, 3 homers, 7 RBIs, and a stolen base. He's a top 10 player in fantasy. He is the number one second baseman, and he is also shortstop eligible. Flowers to Otto Lopez.
Oh, man. He's hitting 343.
That's incredible.
Know, and with a decent amount of power, too. It's not earth-shattering, but he's been able to. I mean, he's got a few home runs and 9 some power in it. Yeah,
pretty good.
Not nothing. It's just an outrageous year, breakout year for Otto Lopez. One of the very best players in baseball right now.
Love it. And speaking of best players on one of the better teams recently, the Marlins. We'll talk about them later. Garrett Mitchell, last hitter here. Garrett Mitchell, over the last 2 weeks, is 16 for 38 with a .421 batting average, a .1277 OPS, 7 runs scored, 3 homers, 9 RBIs. Garrett Mitchell was somebody who came up early in the season as some name of interest. Now he's back. Carson, are we interested in Garrett Mitchell?
I still think we're not, but I just do want to say I feel like the Brewers have eight Garrett Mitchells.
They have
the Brewers just
Bryce Terang is Garrett Mitchell.
Yeah, it just keeps going. No, I don't think Garrett Mitchell is, for the same reasons that we highlighted earlier in the year. There's just a lot of suspect things in his game, and I don't totally believe in it. In a shallow league, those flaws become a lot more evident as your margin of error decreases.
Yeah, it's the Brewers definitely have a type. And I was a little surprised that they traded away one of their types in Caleb Durbin. But they got Kyle Harrison, so you can't really complain. But it's just weird to have a type, acquire your type, and then trade away your type. Anyway, Brewers got something going on over there because they are such a good team. Their player development is fantastic. Their pitching development, equally fantastic. Now, I have a little segment here as part of the top performers of the last week. Because the Yankees, my Yankees, got swept by your Twins, it was a three-game series. I picked three Twins that have been fantastic over the last week. Pull out that hat, Carson. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it. He's got his Twins hat on. If you're listening to us through audio channels, Carson just pulled out a very cool Twins hat. It's got the TC on it. Love it. And so I picked three Twins out of respect for the three-game sweep of the Twins I should say, of the Yankees by the Twins. So first up, we've got Taj Bradley, back-to-back double-digit K games, 12 innings, 21 strikeouts, a 1.5 ERA, 0.83 whip, two wins, one quality start. Taj Bradley, player of interest earlier in the season, went on the IL, I forget with what exact back arm something, stopped throwing a splitter so much, but over the last few starts, has started throwing that splitter a lot again. Is Taj Bradley must roster?
Yeah, absolutely. He had a start, I believe yesterday against Cleveland, where he had 25 whiffs. And I'll tell you this, Eric. Taj Bradley, eventually I'm going to write about it, has a very bizarre thing going on. His fastball, which has sat 97.6 miles an hour with 18 inches of IVB, got all of two whiffs. His cutter got 17.
That's nuts.
That's insane. It's so weird. He has a fastball that doesn't get whiffs, and yet he makes it work generally. Bradley's a super interesting pitcher, but he's done quite well, and he's been utilizing that cutter a lot more recently. It's corresponded with some great success. Very excited for Taj Bradley. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's just been so good. He's been more good than bad this year, and I think any bad, per se, in quotes, has been sort of kind of around the injury just before.
I think I just agree, after. Yeah.
So maybe Taj Bradley has finally figured it out. I'd like to see a little more consistency going forward, sustained, before I totally buy in. And maybe I miss out this year, but maybe then next year I'm in, you know, because the talent has always been there. Next up here, Luke Kuechel. Back from the proverbial dead, 7 for 16 with a 438 batting average, 1425 OPS. Holy smokes. Six runs scored, two homers, two RBIs, no stolen bases, but he's gained outfield eligibility. Are we back in on Luke Kuechel?
No, we are not. I don't mind Luke Kuechel, but I don't think he's really that great. And you talk about this nice week he's had. I think that still bumps his full season OPS. I don't think it's above 700 still. You may correct that. That's what I thought. It's not. It's a good week. It's not that great. Overall, Luke Kuechel does not do enough for you offensively, although this next guy quite may.
Yes. Carson, you have been trying to get me to talk about this particular player for weeks. And so I was like, look, we got swept. I'll do it. I'll finally do it. I'm going to give in. I'm caving. I've also did some research into him. Finally, not that I wasn't paying attention before, but I did some in-depth look here. And Cody Clemens has been absolutely fantastic since May. This includes May, I should say. May, June, and so far in July. He has 37 runs scored, 13 home runs, 37 RBIs, a .265 batting average, an elite .363 wOBA, and he's triple eligible at first, second, and outfield on most platforms. Carson, tell everybody why you love Cody Clemens so much.
Cody Clemens, I think, I mean, you kind of summed it up. I think that eligibility really hammers it home of like why he's so valuable. Plays all over. He's generally just solid at most things. That's not very interesting to say, but he's a guy that doesn't have any super obvious flaws about him, except you probably haven't heard the name very much if you're not a Twins fan. And so you're a little like confounded over this, but you know, the last 60 games or so, he's been one of the better infielders in baseball. Simple as that. Great player.
He has an average exit velocity in the 93rd percentile in baseball of 92.7 miles per hour. He's barreling the ball up at 13.5%, and his launch angle is a really good optimized for power at 16.5%, 261 XBA. So he's basically hitting right about where he should be. He's just been quietly really solid. And yep. I have to tip my hat, which is not on my head, but I will tip my hat to you, sir, for calling out Cody Clemens a few weeks ago. But he has maintained that level of production, and he might be sneaking into rosterability here in shallow leagues. I think he has.
I think already. As a good bench option and kind of that bench utility role. Like, absolutely. Especially in daily leagues, sub him in. Perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So that right there does it for the longest captain's report in shallows history here.
Certainly.
Yes. When we come back, it's a segment called Bail or Sale. So to find out what that is, you'll have to stay tuned because we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Shallows. I'm Eric. That's Carson. And this is Bail or Sale. These are players that have underwhelmed. And do we trade them away selling low, or do we hold out for future success? And we generally on this podcast talk about a mixture of fringy shallow league players and some big kahuna names. I'm talking about like the first, second, third round. Like, how many times have we talked about Paul Skeens? How many times have we talked about, you know, Juan Soto?
I think we've talked about Manny Machado and Gunnar Henderson. I know we've talked about Fernando Tatis Jr. about 8 times.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not afraid to talk about the big names. And that is exactly what we're going to do here. These are, quite honestly, the biggest of big names that we probably can talk about on this show. So first up here, bail or sale, Carson, on none other than generational talent, Paul Skeens. Told you we're going to talk about big names here.
I go so back and forth with Paul Skeens this year. So much of his game looks great. And remember, any overall rate metric you see this year with Paul Skeens is going to be a bit inflated because of what happened in March in that first start against the Mets, where you got, what, 5 earned runs and 1 out? That's going to inflate his ERA a ton. Everything about him still looks pretty good, but something is notably off with Skeens. And it's becoming more apparent recently. He had a few outings where he's just gotten rocked. I believe it was against the Reds the other day, where he just got knocked around. Maybe most notably, he hasn't had a fastball touch 100 miles an hour all year. That was wild. Something he used to sit around 99 at. Now, Zach Wheeler is a guy that has had diminished velocity, and he's been totally fine. We've seen some pitchers do that. But with Skeens, that's definitely something that has masked some issues, and maybe that's being more apparent. I am overall concerned with Paul Skeens. However, I think if you're selling now, I think you need to stick this one out, because I do think two things. Number one, Pittsburgh has meaningful baseball to play for, and so they're going to let Skeens have more action. They're going to have more run support. And if things kind of snap back into place with Skeens, he's going to be one of the best pitchers in baseball yet again. I also think that all the metrics around Skeens are generally favorable. Here's the thing, Eric. For all the hoopla, his strikeout rate's still about 29%. His walk rate, still about 5%. For all of the things you hear about Skeens, he is hardly the pitcher that is, you know, struggling. And I'm putting very massive air quotes about this. Let me put this here. His strikeout rate, 29.3%. Walk rate, 5.5%. Some other notable things. Here, his xERA 2.74, it's still very good. His FIP is still solid, and that fastball velocity is at 96.9. is that really upper echelon? No. Is that still really solid? Yeah. And let's not forget, dude throws 7 pitches. I mean, he's really good. Whip is 1.04.
You know what's funny about him throwing seven pitches is I remember when he got called up a few years ago, they're like, yeah, he's a fastball slider guy. And then he added a third pitch, like the splinker, just before getting called up. And now he has seven pitches. Yeah. That's five more than what he was throwing when he was in the minor leagues just 3 years ago. That's pretty nuts.
Yep. He's got a sub three whip. I mean, literally barely. It's 2.99, but still. And if you, I mean, if you, since that Mets start, right, his ERA is 3.17. It's 3.58 if you include that. Like, it's one of those things where I think if you look going forward, how is it going to affect you? I think I just do think Skeens is fine despite this little hiccup. I think that's what you have to call it.
Yeah, I think, yeah, this is definitely a hiccup. He's been so good, so generationally good and dominant up until right now, essentially.
Yeah.
That it's like, even this quote bad is still really friggin' good. It's insane. That's how good he is. That's how quickly he can turn it around on a dime too, right? Let's say it's a slight mechanical flaw, which I've seen side by sides of him on the internet. It could be a slight mechanical flaw, and then all of a sudden he's back to, you know, sub two ERA, most dominant pitcher of his time type of pitching. So I would not sell low on Paul Skeens whatsoever. Also, why would you sell your first round pick at a loss? That is how you lose in fantasy baseball.
We'll get to that.
All right, next up here. DeGoat, Jacob DeGrom, bail or sale?
DeGrom is, speaking of weird pitchers, DeGrom has looked really good at times this year, and he has also looked really mortal at times this year. He's got a 3.49 ERA, 100 innings. First of all, it's great that Jacob DeGrom is regularly throwing pitches again. The whip is really excellent. A lot of things are great with him. And yet he does have some clunkers every once in a while, and especially recently. He's been knocked around a bit. If you got DeGrom, you are likely investing fairly highly in him. I forget where he went, but I want to say it was around round five, I think, where he went most of the time this year. Sounds about right, Eric? That's what I think.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yep. This is a very similar case with Skeens, except I think there's some more glaring flaws, and namely, that's that DeGrom has not fixed the home run issue. It's still really present for him, and that makes me a lot more concerned with his viability. I think I'm listening to offers. That's where I'm standing. I think generally with DeGrom, I would not be opposed to saying I don't think that great ceiling. I mean, not even the 2021 ceiling that was untouchable. I mean, like the sub, kind of what we saw last year. I don't know if that's quite coming back. And so I am hesitant to be that bullish on DeGrom moving forward.
Yeah, he's been good. He hasn't been dominant. That being said, he's got a 3.49 ERA, a 1.01 whip, 122 strikeouts in 102/3 innings. It just, like, there haven't been consistent 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, you know, like, yeah. it's been more of like 5 innings, 6 strikeouts, even though I'm looking at his game log here and it's like, yeah, he's just going 6 pretty consistently, but it just doesn't feel as dominant as he's been in the past, even last year. That being said, he's healthy, and that there's something to be said for that, for a guy who for almost 5 years just could not stay on the field. All right, next up here is a guy who can't seem to come off the field. He's been one of the more durable pitchers of his era here, and that is maybe the least, quote, big name on this list, but still a guy who was considered an ace not too long ago. Kevin Gausman, bail or sale?
I am bailing on Kevin Gausman.
I'm trying. I'm trying myself.
Bailing on Kevin Gausman. He is a guy that lives and dies by a single pitch. And if that pitch is not really working, things can struggle all that. Now, granted, if you look at like Statcast run value and stuff, it's definitely the fastball rather than the splitter. That's been like the machine for it. But ultimately, it's the splitter that it, that invokes fear. It's the pitch that definitely gets him into the strong, that gets him out of the counts. The fastball sets it up, the splitter puts it away, right? That's been the way, that's been Gausman's MO for the better part of half a decade now. That splitter ain't splitting. It's just not doing what it used to. And the fastball is solid, but it's resulted in a lack of a real great second offering for Gausman. And that's made things much more difficult overall. His ERA is north of 4. I don't expect it to come below that. That's really hurting you.
Yeah. Consider this. His first two outings of the season with the double digit strikeouts, he was fantastic. If you, yep. And I realize this is an arbitrary quote, arbitrary endpoint type situation, but if you take those two out, his ERA is way worse than just north of 4. So, yep. Yeah, it's not been a great year so far for Kevin Gausman. With that in mind, though, he has had seasons where one half is not good and the other half is absolutely dominant, and it's entirely possible that things turn around for him, but he is starting to get up there in age. I would sell as well. I'm trying to, in fact. All right, next up here, talk about big names. J-Rod, Julio Rodriguez, bail or sale, or is this just first half Julio, here comes second half Julio?
I am going to go a little against the grain, and I think that as much as I like the idea of second half Julio, I think you may do better if you sell on the idea of second half Julio.
Ooh.
And one of the reasons is because the stolen bases for Julio aren't quite what they were. He's at 12 right now. Which is, you know, totally fine. He's pacing for 20, but Julio is a guy you would really like to be pushing 30. And overall, a lot of the things with him, are A, dependent on a second half surge, and B, dependent on getting a ton of stolen bases. I am fairly, first of all, I don't know if I totally buy the second half thing. I feel like that's, I know it happened a lot of times, but I don't know if that's necessarily just circumstance or what have you. I'm just trying to real quick make sure. I think Julio Rodriguez is pretty solid, but the stolen bases not really being there scares me a lot. I'm just trying to make sure real quick. Last year in the first half, he had 17 stolen bases. He's pacing well behind that this year, and that's despite better metrics overall. I think that shows that he's going to be more of a 22 stolen base guy. And like I said earlier, those margins really matter. I think you may want to sell on a second half surge that may or may not come.
Yeah, you know, this one's tough for me because I look at all, if I maintain my process, which is for a player like Julio, I basically know what he's going to do. 3 out of the 4 years that he's been in the league, he's done XYZ. The one exception being the year he was hurt. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at his current surface level numbers and his expected numbers, and his expected numbers are right in line with the rest of his career. So I think that second half is going to happen again, but I think it's a really interesting take where you say, sell on the idea of it because maybe you can get a lot for that. And I find that fascinating because to me, I'd always want, okay, I haven't gotten, if in a roto sense, right? I haven't gotten the production that I expected. I want that to catch up. Or in a head-to-head sense, he can carry me for a month, you know? But I think it's fascinating to sell on the idea of him doing that. It's just so interesting to me.
It's the kind of meta games where I'm like, I don't really know. And I may look like a total idiot in 2 months and he's tearing it up going, well, all right. But I'm totally fine with that happening. You know, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think like the stolen bases are something I'm trying to pay attention to. And that'll come up a lot in a second of like, where is that pacing? Because that's kind of the perceived value going in is this is a guy that's a 2020 or 2025, 25, 25, 30, 30 type player. I don't think Julio is going to get that on the stolen bases. And I actually just made sure, verified coming back. The stolen bases aren't what increases in the second half. That's a first half thing primarily, or at least it keeps pace. So that's fairly consistent. And if that doesn't change, then you're just focusing on the offense. And I'm not totally sold on that.
That's fair. You know what's really bothered me about Julio, just to sum up his little piece here, is that there really hasn't been massive leap in improvement ever.
Oh, he's been like the same player for 5 years now.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
He's Julio Rodriguez. I've just totally resigned myself to. He will not be any better than he was 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy for a guy that young. Like, I know everyone preaches like, oh, Michael Harris, he's this young, he can improve. PCA can improve, or so-and-so, whatever. You pick any young player. Julio basically came in at his ceiling and has stayed there, which is pretty crazy. All right, moving on here. Next up is Corbin Carroll. Bail or sale?
Wow. Weird year for Corbin Carroll. Weird year. Bail.
Ooh.
Bail. Absolutely bail. His season stats are carried by a crazy strong April. Since then, he has been pretty good. But like Julio, the stolen bases are lagging behind.
Yeah, they really are.
It's such a huge aspect to Carroll's game that I think right now his stock value is currently on the fact that he's a quote-unquote steals guy, and earlier the overall season stats are bumping up what's been a relatively, I'm not going to say pedestrian, but just a decent year overall. I think Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll, is someone that you should try to get the value on all you can. Also, anecdotally, I think the Diamondbacks are in a really weird space, and I don't know what's happening there, and I feel like the vibes are off.
Do you think we saw Corbin Carroll's peak last year?
No, I think we will see Corbin Carroll's peaks 4 years from now when he's on a different team. I'm kind of not kidding there. Corbin Carroll's a guy that has an elite and crazy amount of talent, but I don't think it's all fallen quite into place. We may have seen this peak his rookie year, but like, I think Carroll is, I don't think it's happening this year. I think something's off, and I don't know if he's banged up or what have you. But if you look at the month-by-month splits, it's been a steady decline since April.
Never a good sign, in my opinion, when you see that. All right, next up here. there's only maybe two names that are bigger than this. Juan Soto, bail or sale? Now, hold on. Before you listeners or viewers lose your mind, how can you even consider bailing on Juan Soto? We're going to put this in a very specific context. Go for it, Carson.
Yeah, I put in parentheses here that this is with our 8-teamers that are listening here. We normally talk in a 12-team context, mainly just – or a 10-team rather, because it's a nice round number, and it's very easy for us to conceptualize, and we play in more 10-teamers. But I've played in an 8-team league. The margins are crazy small. You look on the wire on an 8-teamer, and there are really good players, and it's very weird. So a guy like Soto being traded, I don't think is that outrageous. And I want to say another thing about Soto. Remember when he sold like 45 bags last year? No, that's not happening this year. And that has thrown his overall production in. It's gone totally whack, because actually he's hitting phenomenal. It's been masked because the Mets have been such a train wreck, but he has an OPS. God, it's closing in on 1,000. He's been absolutely sensational, hitting .290. He's been great, one of the best players in baseball offensively. But the stolen bases, he would be lucky to get 12. That is not the top three level of production he was drafted on. Top four, you know, that's not really what you'd expect. So for Soto, I kind of go back and forth on this. I think this is another guy with Enkai. I think you could definitely listen to. I'm also of the opinion that I don't think many players are, especially in shallow leagues, are totally untouchable. If there's a package or something for Soto, it would have to be a lot. And I couldn't possibly come up on the fly with some mock trade I'd really love. But if it's, I don't know. If I want to say, I'm really trying. If I want to say something like Max Meyer and Otto Lopez, and I don't know, pick a third guy.
Louis Varland.
Yeah. I mean, that would really make me scratch my head, because I love all three of those guys.
Yeah.
And I think with Soto, that upside is a little bit capped, because he's not the 5 category player he was.
Yeah, you know, he's hitting 299. Last year he hit 263. He's on pace for over 40 home runs for the third consecutive season.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's been bad. His strikeout rate is 12.5%. It's not like he's been bad. What we're saying here is that he is not returning the value relative to where you drafted him. And that requires a bail tag. That being said, and in a super shallow league. Yeah.
Hard to bail on any of these guys. Yeah, I know.
But right.
We're talking eight teamers.
Right. Eight teamers here for Juan Soto, but really, you'd have to get a haul for him back that would fill several holes that you might have on your roster. And honestly, if you play in an A-team league, how do you have holes on your roster? You haven't been listening to us all season. You shouldn't have holes on your roster in an A-team league.
Or maybe you have been listening to us and didn't drop Zach Wheeler because of us switched.
Oh, don't say that. All right. That's bail or sale. When we come back, these are just some fun observations that we've noticed throughout the season. Recently, in general, if you will. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Shallows. That's Carson. I'm Eric. And this is just some fun observations that we've made recently. So anything unusual or any anomalies we've noticed recently? And here's a big one. The Marlins.
Oh, my God.
The Marlins. The Marlins are an anomaly for themselves, for baseball, in general. The Marlins, Carson.
I think I'm going to make a prediction right now that I don't know if I'm totally like fully believing in, but I do think in 3 months' time, we may come back to this and say, Carstrodamus, you have proved it. I think that in a divisional series, the Marlins are going to defeat the Dodgers and things are going to go haywire. I love this team. I think they are really good. I don't think people are paying nearly enough attention. And I love like how they're built too. It's really playoff centric. You've got Max Meyer, most underrated pitcher in baseball, maybe. You've got Yuri Perez, who recently, by the way, Yuri Perez getting pulled from a perfect game. We didn't even talk about it yet, but that is so like infuriating and I hate it so much. And I do not care about anything you say about maintaining pitcher's arm. He could have chucked fastballs down the middle. He would have been fine. Just let the dude pitch. I get it. I don't care. This happened with Clayton Kershaw to me. I wrote a whole article about it. It was the maddest I've ever been in my life. And I empathize with all the A's fans that were there because it's just, let him go. let him screw it up. If he allows one hit, big deal. If he walks a guy, big deal. Combined no hitters, you know what, those have happened before, but like perfect game.
I know, just
let him do it.
92 pitches through seven innings, if I'm not mistaken.
Let him skip a turn in the rotation if you really want, like it's fine. Anyway,
right, because he didn't miss time just now with an arm injury. He missed time with a gracilis muscle, whatever that is.
You know what? Like, I get you want to maintain it, but at some point, you know, we're playing a game here, guys.
I know. Just let it make a perfect game, not a no-hitter.
Same song and dance from Kershaw a few years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Digress.
Yeah. We've already talked about Otto Lopez, Xavier Edwards, his partner in crime right next to him, but Jacob Marcy, who has not been doing well, but who I think will do well. You've got Owen Kiese, who's been doing pretty well. Liam Hicks, the breakout guy really this year. Kyle Stowers, we were talking about a little bit before, definitely has that potential to go on a tear in a small sample.
Oh yeah.
I like the Marlins a lot. I think they're really good. I think they're a team to look out for next year if there's baseball, and I think they're a team to look out for in October. By the way, Jeurys Ruiz has been really good this year, and like no one has talked about that, but he has 19 stolen bases.
That's pretty crazy. He's come out of nowhere.
109 plate appearances and is hitting. He has four home runs, which is insane. I don't, just, baseball's weird.
The Marlins are weird.
I think the Marlins are really good. I think they're going to surprise people in October. I do.
Yeah, they very well could. It would be fascinating if they were buyers at this trade deadline because everyone thought that they were going to be sellers.
I could totally see them adding to the bullpen and getting a couple things.
Yeah. Oh, and can you imagine if Pete Fairbanks actually started to pitch better?
Yeah. Yeah, that would help.
That would definitely help. And the fun thing is that they've basically been doing this with three pitchers, and most of the time they were doing it with two before Yuri came back, and that was Max Meyer and Sandy Alcantara, as you had mentioned.
Sandy Alcantara, by the way, MLB innings leader.
Again, he's back. He's back in that sense.
That's crazy. Again, no one's really mentioned that, but yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Ratio's not too great, but he's eating innings, so that's good. All right, next up here, I found this fascinating because he's just been so good, and we've talked about him a little bit. Yordan Alvarez has a 434 WOBA. That is first in baseball among qualified hitters, and I say that on purpose because Esmerlin Valdez is up there, and I don't think he should be because he's been in the majors for, what, 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. So, qualified hitters. Yordan Alvarez is first in WOBA with a 434 WOBA. That is 28 points higher than the number two hitter, Juan Soto, which is pretty crazy. Here's the nuts part. Absolutely bonkers. Is Yordan Alvarez's expected WOBA is 473. It's higher. I didn't think you could get higher than 434. His expected WOBA is 40 points higher.
You want to know the craziest part? 2024, Aaron Judge's WOBA was 476.
That's the kind of season he's having.
That's what we're talking about. That's Judge in levels. I think we can safely say that. Yordan Alvarez, I think, despite the fact that Bobby Wood Jr. does have a lead in WAR, it's Yordan Alvarez's MVP campaign to lose because I think the offensive categories are just they kind of speak for themselves more. I mean, argue against a wall against a 621 slugging. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just absolutely insane season from Yordan Alvarez as long as he stays healthy, which is the big thing and the big issue people had with him coming into the season. And we explained it to you as simple as this. If he stays healthy, he does this. It happens. This is what happens. And guess what? He stayed healthy. So, next up on the list here is Chris Sale. On May 20th, he went 7 innings of one-run ball against the Miami Marlins that we were just talking about. Since then, he's only gone 6 innings once in 6 starts, which I think is strange for a pitcher of his caliber. Carson, is Chris Sale kind of a sell?
That's a great question. I think for Sale, I think you can't. And I think you can't because everything is still really good. Yeah. First of all, let me just put it this way. Let me ask you this, Eric. Does he still weigh like 160 pounds? And does his fastball still come off from like the left-hand back batter's box?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's fine. he's Chris Sale. Yeah. Most of the time in my in my first pitch podcast, Sale usually starts on the weekend, and I say the line and say it's a Chris Sale start, and then I move on. Like by this point, it's been a decade. You know what you're getting. He's still great. I think the volume is something that he just notably hasn't been as efficient recently. It's not a concern of like, oh, he's really laboring after 80 pitches. It's just kind of hasn't gone his way.
You have an interesting stat here that you wrote down with Sale during his time with the Braves. Tell everyone.
Yeah. Chris Sale, since being traded for Vaughn Grisham, has a ERA of 2.42 with the Atlanta Braves, which is just sensational.
Can you repeat? Who was he traded for?
Vaughn Grisham.
What?
Remember that? And people were like, oh, yeah, interesting salary dump. Boston.
Boston. Oh boy, I love it so much. Anyway, Jeff Hoffman has not given up an earned run since June 6th. That is in a month. He's only given up one run, and it was unearned in that time span. Carson, you said it here. When everyone was losing their minds, including myself, over Jeff Hoffman, I said he said he was going to do the thing, and he's not doing the thing. But is he doing the thing? Which is throw a slider more. He's been fantastic recently.
Jeff Hoffman, I have to give full credit, and I'm trying to pull up desperately. Yes, Davey Andrews of Fangraphs, I need to give you credit for the greatest timed article in baseball history. when he published the article on Jeff Hoffman, the worst BABIP of all time, on June 9th.
Nice.
And that article, since then, he has been nearly flawless. Jeff Hoffman will probably always have to buy a alcoholic beverage in Canada due to Miguel Rojas taking him yard. Yeah. But he's been really solid, and I think you should add him.
You know what's crazy is his BABIP is still over 400.
It's still crazy. Like, it's still insane.
There's still major positive regression coming for Jeff Hoffman. I just wish, honestly, for saves plus holds, I wish he was getting a few more of the holds, because he could be tremendously valuable in that particular format. Because Louis Varland is not letting go of that closer role, especially with how poorly. Yeah, it's just, man. I wish he would just pick up a few more. And that is such a weird category, saves plus hold, essentially holds. It's a weird category that comes and goes. So he may go a month with two saves plus holds, but then the next month he could get seven. So it's, you know, roster roles. I kind of want to pick him up in those formats that I play in with saves plus holds. I kind of want to do it. I think I'm going to do it after the show.
I think I will.
I'm going to do it. All right. And next up, our last bullet point here in our fun observations, the MLB team runs leader, the first team to get to 500. Carson?
Eric, who do you think it is?
It's the Nationals.
It's the Washington Nationals. It's the Washington Nationals. This is going to set up for one of the weirder deadlines and maybe one of the weirder off seasons. Is what the heck do the Nationals do? They have probably later than they expected, kind of succeeded in their rebuild off the emergence of James Wood and CJ Abrams as franchise players, basically as soon as they have to extend or deal them. So we're either going to see some major contracts. We're going to see some major selling again. I don't know. It's weird. There's a fork in the road that the Nationals are going to have to deal with, but the Nationals currently are the first team to score 500 runs. They narrowly beat out the Dodgers there. And they are, I'm just double checking here, they are, I think, third in runs allowed, just behind the Colorado Rockies, of course, and the traveling A's, who, of course, gave up a million runs in Las Vegas. So,
yeah.
I think the lesson here is watch more Nationals games.
I think that they should change their team name to the Washington James Wood, because he is just an animal out
Washington
there.
Washington Woods.
Why not? It's going to be really interesting to see what they do at the deadline, because their best starting pitcher is a 30-year-old who came over, back to the major leagues, I should say, from Japan.
Foster Griffin's been good, actually.
He's been
really solid.
I think really lucky, though. Gives up a lot of hard contact. A lot of the home runs, he's given up a lot of home runs, and a lot of them have been solo shots. There's something to be said for that, right? Where you're preventing runners from getting on base. So if you give up a home run with nobody on base, it hurts less. But I would just, I'm a little worried there. I'm a little worried. Talk about sell high. I would sell high on Foster Griffin. But the Washington Nationals have been fantastic behind James Wood and CJ Abrams. Hopefully they can keep it up, because we saw a tale of two halves for James Wood last year, and we've seen a tale of two halves for CJ Abrams as well. So they've both had their great half so far. Hopefully they can maintain it coming out of the All-Star break. This week, the All-Star break is this week. Oh my God, we didn't even mention that.
I know.
You know, it's kind of crazy. Are you looking forward to the home run derby now that they have instituted the out system and taken away the clock?
Yeah, I kind of just want to see it. It's been ages since that's been around. I know a lot. I have a suspicion it's going to be kind of underwhelming.
It is 100%.
It's going to be like not as great as people remember it, but I think it's better than the clock system, which I think was rather annoying. I think it's a shame. A lot of pitchers, and Mizorowski, I think, isn't going to pitch in the All-Star game. That was the headline. I think that's a real shame. I think that the All-Star game is the best of the big four All-Star game, Pro Bowl, you know, kind of stuff, whatever. Certainly better than the Pro Bowl. Good God.
Oh, goodness.
Good
that
Lord.
Still exists.
Kind of, sort of, not really.
It's like flag football now, right?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Anyway. I think the Home Run Derby is going to lack a little bit of energy because players are just going to take pitches now. There's going to be fewer swings. I don't think there's going to be nearly as many home runs hit now.
Should just be Shota Imanaga out there.
Oh, yeah. That'd be fun. Or Foster Griffin with the amount of home runs that those two give up. I'm excited to watch Ben Rice in it. I hope that doesn't tank his second half of the season. I know it's a total myth, but it does sap a lot of energy. And maybe this year, because there's no clock and because it's an out system, it won't sap guys' energy as much because they won't be swinging every 3 seconds. So, yeah, looking forward to All-Star Weekend. It's always a fun weekend. I like watching the celebrity softball game, too. It's a lot of fun to always watch that. But yeah, we're going to wrap it up right there. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. To make sure you don't miss it, or any episode for that matter, please subscribe. We're available wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a question for us to answer right here on the pod, reach out to us on social media, leave a comment on YouTube, hit us up on the PL Discord, or email us at theshallowspod@gmail.com. He's Carson Picard at Carson Picard on Blue Sky. I'm Eric Henriksen at Eric Hinn on Blue Sky on Twitter. That's Eric with a K, reminding you that murky waters are fine if you know how to swim. See you next time in the shallows.
Take care, y'all.